And now for a few minutes, a look back to that day and a simple question. Do you need help? The answer was also simple. The woman in the wheelchair, we now know her name was Tina Hansen, said yes. So the man who asked the question, along with a younger co-worker, John Sequeira, picked the woman up, moved her from the wheelchair into an evacuation chair, and carried it down 68 floors of the North Tower of the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. A simple act, impossibly hard, but a simple act that years later created such complications because the man was called a 9/11 hero, and it turns out that can be very hard to take. The man was New Jersey native Michael Benfante, branch manager for the telecommunications company Network Plus. A CBS cameraman caught him just after he left the tower, just before the tower fell.
So I started going down the steps. I heard people shouting. I stopped at like 68, and there's a woman in a wheelchair, and I got her in the strap wheelchair and just carried her down the steps and carried her down 68 floors, man. And then we got lost on the fifth floor. It was chaos.
Michael Benfante would go on to become that guy who carried the woman out of the towers. He sat on Oprah's couch, married his fiancée Joy almost exactly a year later, had a son. Life was great. Not. Michael Benfante's new book with Dave Hollander is Reluctant Hero. A 9/11 survivor speaks out about that unthinkable day, what he's learned, how he's struggled, and what no one should ever forget. And he joins us from the NPR studios in New York to tell us what those things are. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on the show, Robin.
And yet we should say right up front, you know, there's a contradiction here because this is going to be a difficult conversation. Mm-hmm. You write in the book right straight off. You don't like to tell this story. Sometimes still you feel so awful about it. You can't hear yourself think a single thought when you think about that day. Mm-hmm. What happens? What crowds out, you know, the thinking? What comes in?
You know, initially when I was talking about what happened that day, it was a way to provide a story from that day that was of hope, was of what I feel we are as Americans, all of us, willing to help our true character. And to try to get away from the images, the destruction, the evilness that occurred that day. But years later, as you're trying to, I guess, trying to wrap your arms around the whole thing and really start to think about why. Why did I survive? Why did I find Tina? Why did all my reps made it out? What am I supposed to do now? And it made for a lot of confusion. And it's just hard to, I guess, focus my thoughts on the good that occurred that day, and I started to get away from that, and I needed to try a way to express it and get it out.
Well, and you mentioned the images. I mean, we have to be blunt, because
this is
what you weren't allowed to do for a long
time
and was part of the problem. You saw bodies fall.
Right. Here you have a situation where I just put Tina in an ambulance, and my back was still to the destruction. I didn't even realize the South Tower was down. I put her into an ambulance. She began to cry. She motioned me to give her a hug. I give her a hug. I give her my business card. I said, when I get back up there, I'm going to find your wheelchair. And then I turn around, and I start to try to take in the enormity of it all. You know, I see a large piece of facade from a tower standing in front of me, but my tower is intact, and I cannot see from my vantage point the South Tower is down. And then all of a sudden, I see, you know, bodies falling. I don't even know how to describe it still to this day. Jumping. At the same time, there's a camera in my face. So it's so surreal. It's really hard to believe it all happened that way.
And that's why you say to the CBS cameraman, I did this, I did that. I got out of my office. My whole office got out. And then on the 68th floor, I picked up a woman in a wheelchair. We carried her down. And meanwhile, people watching this on television are thinking, you did what? You know, and to you, you hadn't even digested that yet. Because seconds later, the video is of you and everyone running for your lives because the tower is coming down. Your tower is coming down.
First thing that came to my mind was I messed up. I waited around here too long, and now I'm going to die. And I looked around once at the tower, and I took off. I was literally trying to run out of my skin, it seemed. And if I could have, I would have.
Well, instead of jumping out of your skin, you do a face plant under a truck. I mean, thankfully you found a vehicle and just dive under there. Somebody lands on you, top of you. It's a fireman. He and you survive. But okay, so all this unbelievable trauma. And then you're a hero.
Right.
You know, take us back to the moment in the tower when you've come down, you know, 20 floors or so from your floor, and you decide for some reason on the 68th floor, you decide, I'm just going to get out of the stairwell here and just see what I can find on this floor. And you see three women in a – everybody can picture these plate glass offices, and that you see a cluster of women, and you bang on the door, and they hit the open button, which thankfully the electricity worked. The door opens, and they part and reveal this woman in a wheelchair.
The woman steps aside, and I see the woman in a wheelchair, and I said, do you need help? And she says yes, not really even anticipating what the ramifications of her answer are going to be. It was just, yes, okay, let me start helping you. And the thing about it is you have these women standing there, these three women holding bags in their hands, nice and still, not going anywhere, because you know why? They didn't want to leave their friend. And someone brought to my attention, they said, how many minutes till your tower collapsed? And I got out about 5 or 6 minutes. Those women, they weren't leaving her. And, you know, finding Tina, but also finding them, and we were all able to make it out is just... You know, that's what I have to keep going back to as far as moving ahead and having hope and being positive. So,
did you ever have a thought that, yes, she might need help, but how could you ever carry a wheelchair down 68 flights? You know, did you ever hesitate?
No, you know, and the thing was, I really didn't know how it was all going to happen, but it just went into motion. And I saw that we were able to do it, and I was like, I'm in it now, and... You know, as we got lower, obviously we ran into some obstacles, and fortunately we were able to overcome them.
Blockages, and these are some of the things that also haunt you. You saw the firemen going the other way.
Right. Probably 75 to 100. I don't know. Could have been more. Could have been a little less. And they were exhausted. They were carrying tools and hoses, and they were going up as everybody was going down, and all they kept saying, they were just relaying our fears, just saying, everything's going to be okay. Just keep moving. Everything's fine. And you could tell what their lips were saying. Their eyes weren't telling the same story. But they, I mean, come on. To me, you can't call me a hero. Not when you think of them. And thank God for them, too, because they're responsible for keeping me positive and keeping me going and getting out of there.
Michael Benfante on 9/11. He and co-worker John Sequeira carried Tina Hansen in a wheelchair down 68 floors of the World Trade Center. A cameraman recorded his story right after he did that. President Bush mentioned him in a speech. Everyone called him a hero. The manager of the Boston Sheraton sent him a note saying, we've had prime ministers here, but we've never had anyone as heroic as you. And he starts to think, can they be really talking to me, a guy from New Jersey? And it all starts to curdle. He hasn't been able to really talk about this till recently. So, Michael, if you can, what happened?
I saw the way we, as a country, as a city, as a country, as a world, how we were in the aftermath of 9/11 in those 2 weeks. We were unified. We were each other's keeper, each other's brothers and sisters, and how quickly we just got away from it, almost worse than we were beforehand. And I don't know how that's supposed to be, analyzed or proven.
But, well, listen, others have who study this kind of thing have said it. You know, we've become an incredibly polarized country.
Right. I mean, we just started focusing on frivolous and things that really aren't important in life.
Well, reality shows come to mind. You write, you know, this is about our freedom. And how are we exercising it? You know, sharing embarrassing secrets on television, obsessing over the late Anna Nicole Smith. But you also, in retrospect, place the blame not on yourself, but it's almost like you forgive yourself because you started to have what's well known, I mean, survivor's guilt, and in your case, hero's guilt. You know, you already alluded to that. You know, on the one hand, yeah, maybe you can do some good telling the story. On the other hand, you don't feel you deserve it. That's so common.
Right.
And it just feels like you follow a blueprint. You start drinking. You lose jobs, not because of the drinking, just because of circumstances. So suddenly it's like, hey, wait a minute. I thought I was a hero, but, you know, why am I don't have a job? And as you say, you start playing the get out of jail free card. You were in 9/11.
I guess I fell into the same downward spiral that the country did to a certain extent. I started getting away from what was the good that happened that day. You know, I became very cynical, very short-tempered, and just very down. I guess, you know, not being familiar with post-traumatic stress disorder or or depression or however you want to categorize it. But, I definitely fit that bill. And the passing of my father had a profound effect on me to just, forget it attitude, forget it all. It all just doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's just a bad place to be.
Well, you start to ask yourself the same questions you were screaming at the TV set, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, you were screaming at, other Americans. Wait a second, we have all these freedoms. What are you doing with them? And then you turn that question on yourself. You fought so hard to stay alive. Tina is alive. What are you doing with it? And again, I when I mentioned the get out of jail free card, that's what you write, that you had this attitude of I'm entitled to be overwhelmed. I have special license that allows me to find everything meaningless. And it got bad. You almost lost your marriage. You have a young child. Mm-hmm. As you write, it's worse than you would like to share. But it changes in an extraordinary moment. People would give anything for this moment that you had. You're in your funk, sitting in your yard, watching your child out of work, and your neighbor comes and smiles at your little child.
Right. You know what it is? It's I started to just, you get so down, you start getting to think that there is no good in the world, that people aren't neighborly, that we're just all miserable and cynical people, and we're not. You know, you have to take this world as it is, not as you would have it. And to look at my son and, I love, obviously, as any father does, I love my son to death and I truly is just saved my life. And to see my neighbor and see him smile and just being neighborly like I talk about how we should be and focusing on going back to the person I was that made me perform the act that I did on that day and which so many others did in the same way, but they just didn't happen to be standing next to a camera. What better way to memorialize those firemen or those people that are lost or those people that were brought to the unbelievable decision that they had to make to jump from that tower than to go out and help others, to go out and it doesn't take much to just be considerate of others, putting them first sometimes.
And here we are 10 years out. Are you going to do something special with Tina Hansen and John Sequeira?
No, there hasn't been a plan. Really, I try to spend 9/11 with my family first and foremost because, they're the ones that are responsible for me getting through this. And also, they're the ones that are responsible for the way I acted that day.
And by the way, your passion for your family comes through in the book. And one of the reasons you are that person you are is that you have a disabled sister.
Yes.
And it was,
Susan.
You can't help but think that Susan's was some wind beneath your wings in that moment, too.
There's no doubt. I mean, being the oldest, too, she was born with Down syndrome in 1959. So back then it was different, when you have children with disabilities or depending on the severity, sometimes you're asked to institutionalize these children. And my father, and I guess he told me when I was a young boy, and there's certain things you remember growing up. Mm. You can forget so much, and there's the little talks or little anecdotes of wisdom, but this was just something my father said. He remembers going to the hospital and holding her and saying, this child's coming home with me, and she did, and she stayed with us. And so I grew up with her and her friends and running around with them and just trying to appreciate not everybody is born with the same intelligence, the same strength, the same emotional capacity.
Also, it seemed to give you a sense that, you don't leave people behind.
Right, right.
That's Michael Benfante. His new book is Reluctant Hero. You can read an excerpt at hereandnow.org. Michael, thank you and best to you on 9/11.
Thank you very much, Robin. I really appreciate you having me on your show.